My name is Stanley Laham. I did my doctorate from the Department of Immunology and Molecular Genetics at the University of Florida School of Medicine. And my doctoral dissertation was the isolation and characterization of a new virus in the family Retroviridae, which means an RNA virus carrying reverse transcriptase. I'm now retired and always happy to talk to you.
So this film Terrain has come out in the last couple of weeks. I've had trouble getting hold of Dr. Cowan and Dr. Kaufman, who feature heavily in it. They seem to have people fielding questions, and they're not getting back to me. I really wanted to ask them about the theories they're putting forward. So we have the Terrain theory, which is based around the idea that there is nowhere near enough consideration given in medicine to all sorts of factors around one's health when it comes to pathology. And these include things like, toxic environments, toxic toxins in our foods, our mood, things like our gut health, all sorts of things. Say, for example, whether we have a healthy lifestyle or not, that these are very much more important than anything else in determining whether or not we survive or do not survive a disease, and that there has become an obsession over the years with looking at pathogens as the cause of disease, where actually disease is caused by something else, which is basically people being unhealthy in the first place. And I suppose, a logical thing is it's not an either-or question. Both are probably true. But what terrain theory is saying is that this is far, far more important. In fact, it's leaning more towards a homeopathic approach, where all we need to do is put a tiny quantity of something into the body, and actually the body will do its own work. And we don't really need anything like a vaccine or a drug, a pill, or radiology, a treatment like that, in order to sort out an ailment. Beyond that, there is the Terrain film itself. I've just described roughly Terrain theory. The Terrain film also goes on, takes it one step further, saying that viruses do not actually exist, and that the whole idea of the virus has been made up in order to provide an excuse to have a treatment for the virus, namely a vaccine, which will inoculate you against a non-existent virus. So as creating an entire area of medicine which is completely useless to the human body but makes a lot of money for the pharmaceutical industry. And I can see why many people might be skeptical about the pharmaceutical industry, even so far as to say they would make up things that they needed. So what we have is also this thing called germ theory, which is also entertained by the terrain theorists, the modern ones anyway. And that is the David Icke theory and the germ theory, that actually bacteria don't cause diseases either. And not only do viruses not exist, but bacteria don't cause disease. Everything is really caused by your own body state, your own state of mind, whether you're living in fear or whether you're living in sort of happiness and enlightenment, and contentment and harmony with nature. And also whether you're eating organic food or whether you're eating processed food, that sort of thing. So anyway, Stanley, I wonder if you could just take us from step one, because I know you've compared these modern ideas, whether it's the terrain theory, traditional terrain theory, which has been around for a few years, or the terrain theory as misrepresented, I would say, in this terrain film, saying there's no such thing as a virus, because the original terrain theorist never said that. They just said that the viruses aren't anywhere near as important as we think they are. And whether whether it actually makes sense, because I know you've presented this as something a bit similar to the traditional, that is to say, from the 17th century, for example, the miasma theory of medicine. So anyway, what do you make of this idea of terrain, the film, terrain, the theory, and this germ theory?
Well, according to what you've told me, I have no arguments whatsoever with a theory that says that our well-being depends a lot on our environment and what we put into ourselves. There's no doubt that the food industry, that industrial agriculture, industrial meat production, industrial fisheries, especially farm fishes, have caused a lot of unnatural toxins to be in our foods. That, you know, I think is now indisputable, and that good health depends on how, you know, the type of foods we eat, and staying away from stress. But now, from there to say that either viruses don't exist or that bacteria do not cause pathologies, they're not the true cause of diseases, is really going back almost a century and a half, you know, backwards.
Well, look, I suppose I ought to correct myself a little bit, because I mean I'm making out that terrain theory is relatively recent. It was actually around at the time of Pasteur, and it was kind of trying to. There was a bunch of people who were trying to say that Pasteur was wrong, and they are now classed as terrain theorists too.
Well, you've floated two ideas, that this whole business of viruses and pathogens, bacteria, microbes, whether fungi, bacteria, or viruses causing disease, is an invention of big pharma so that they can make money. Well, chronologically, that doesn't make sense, because when we're discovering that bacteria such as Vibrio cholera causes cholera, such as yellow fever was caused by a virus, Big Pharma didn't exist. Big Pharma has certainly taken advantage, especially in the last 40 years, in the last four decades, now that they're totally unregulated, and that the people who are supposed to regulate them are themselves, because at least here in the United States, the Food and Drug Administration is being run by executives from Big Pharma. So there's no doubt that Big Pharma has taken big advantage of that. But to say that viruses don't exist, when we're discovering that viruses cause disease, Big Pharma did not exist. There were your local apothecaries, but not really Big Pharma.
I think another part of this, Stanley, is just using this term germ theory. The idea is that we haven't proved that germs exist. It's just a theory.
The idea, could you repeat that?
Well, it's using the term germ theory, is the idea is to sort of promulgate the idea that germs have not really proven to exist as pathogens. Well, I think, you know, this is a use of language to sort of undermine hundreds of years of diligent research.
Yes, we don't use germ theory. I never once throughout my schooling in the 70s heard, somebody use, whether in microbiology in general, the term, you know, germ theory, because now it's no longer a theory. It was something that was debated in the 19th century, whether germs really cause disease. There were people who absolutely refused, you know, to believe that germs cause disease until it became, doubtless, experimentally, epidemiologically, that germs do cause disease.
Yeah, okay. So how do you actually address this with someone that's saying, well, that germ, is kind of hanging around anyway. It's only when I start to, feel depressed, either feel fearful, my psyche changes, or else possibly I ingest some toxins that those germs actually start doing something and make me sick?
There are two answers to that. Yes, you can weaken your own natural defenses that you were born with stress, fear, and ingesting the wrong stuff, especially all the chemicals that's in our foods, you know, today. But at the same time, no, there is no such thing that the germs are already there. That's why I'm catching. And they were harmless until I started to weaken my immune system. And when a disease is transmitted, it all depends. For example, I could swallow three, 4,000 cholera bacteria and have no cholera because my own natural intestinal flora outcompetes them. But if you take enough of a big dose, then it will multiply and you will get cholera. Same for salmonella. It's all a question of how big of an inoculation when you ingest these pathogens that start their pathogenesis in the intestinal tract.
I suppose when it comes to viruses, though, Stanley, these have become impossible to see under a microscope. They're absolutely minuscule. Has it actually been shown and proved that viruses do exist? Have they been photographed? Have they been filmed? What evidence do we have? Because, if someone is saying that viruses don't exist, we should be replete with masses of evidence that they do.
We are replete with masses of evidence that they do exist. If I may say something myself, let me tell you how I discovered the virus that I discovered. I was growing tissue culture it was suspected that they were cultures of spleen cells, and suspecting that there might be rabies around, what we call the rhabdovirus. But then I started seeing pathologies in those cells that could not be explained by rhabdovirus, that had nothing to do with rhabdovirus. So it had to be something else. Now, were these cells intrinsically sick, or what they had, could it be transmitted to other cell cultures? Which is the first thing I did. And yes, even after ultracentrifuging, the supernatant fluid that these cells were grown in could transmit the same pathology to other cell cultures. And what I was seeing was formation of giant syncytia, cells that would fuse together and become multinucleated cells. Now, in the literature, people have described viruses that cause that. They're called syncytium-forming viruses. And my virus was a syncytium-forming virus, but different from those that they knew before. Then, if it is a virus, I should be able to inoculate animals and create antibodies to it, which I did, and show that there would be precipitation of antigen-antibody complexes in gel diffusion, what is called gel diffusion. Then I illuminated those viruses by making fluorescent antibodies to them, and then looking at them through ultraviolet microscopes. And you could see the points of illumination. My doctoral dissertation is online, by the way, if anybody would like to see it, even though back in 1978, they didn't do that. But in 2010, I received a letter from the University of Florida asking me permission to put my doctoral dissertation online because they wanted to show what kind of research was produced at the university pre-internet, and they digitalized my doctoral dissertation. So anybody can look it up. And when you look at these illuminated viruses, these pictures are beautiful. They almost look like pictures from the Hubble telescope looking at constellations. Then the next step was to do electron microscopy. And you do electron microscopy where, you know, because viruses are too small, that visible wavelength cannot see them. In other words, the wavelength of visible light is larger than a virus. So you needed something with very, very small wavelength, such as an electron, to visualize the viruses. And electron microscopes were invented. And we see them, and the way we know their size is that we have nanobeads that we can put next to them and estimate their size that way. Another thing, by what they call column chromatography, you can see their density, the density of the virus. The other step, which became very current after the 80s, when what they call polymerase chain reaction in 1984 was invented and received the fellow who invented it received the Nobel Prize for that. Then it became much easier to sequence the genes of viruses. Now, so I don't think there's any doubt that viruses exist. They are genetic materials encapsulated in a viral envelope, which is mostly made out of protein. This has been done over and over and over again. Now, as far as viruses causing disease, we all know the curse of smallpox or poliomyelitis. We have seen those viruses, we have sequenced them, and I don't think there's any doubt that they cause the disease, the pathologies that we name. I don't see why people would say that viruses do not exist or that they cannot cause disease.
Okay, well, let me quote then from the film Terrain, which has just been released in a two-part documentary. It explores terrain theory, but it is actually only giving a specific view, Dr. Andrew Kaufman's view and Cowan's view, which is a model, they say, for health. Terrain theory is a model for health that works in symbiosis with nature to promote wellness and healing, free of a corrupt and flawed medical paradigm.
Oh. You see, there's nothing wrong with this statement. In general, there's nothing wrong. If they didn't add that, bacteria don't cause diseases or viruses don't exist, there's nothing wrong with that sentence, because we do have now medicine, the whole medical system based on, money, many unnecessary procedures, etc. So, yes, there's those who believe that, you can lead a very good, healthy life by following, certain principles without ingesting toxins and keeping your state of mind in an undepressed, unstressed state, yeah, it will contribute to longevity. But there is no relationship between that sentence and saying that one, microbes, whether bacteria or viruses, do not cause disease, and that viruses don't exist.
Well, the Terrain film says that Pasteur was wrong. What do you say?
Pasteur got some of his experiments wrong, but Pasteur was absolutely right in developing an attenuated rabies vaccine, even though he didn't know that it was a virus and not a bacteria. Something very interesting. When bacteria were first, you know, seen to be causing diseases, some diseases were being caused by something that people couldn't call a bacteria because it was too small. So it was given the name in French, virus filtrant. In other words, they went through the filters that normally stop bacteria. So viruses were first given the name virus filtrant. And that was the case for rabies, because you couldn't stop them with a regular filter, and they didn't have filters small enough back then to stop a virus. Because remember, you can have millions of virus inside a bacteria. So I would imagine, you know, I don't see where they're coming from. One of the biggest studies concerning a viral disease was by Walter Reed. As you know, the biggest U.S. Army hospital in Washington, in the environs of Washington, is Walter Reed Medical Center. Well, Walter Reed was a researcher, a ruthless researcher, who sacrificed soldiers and natives during the construction of the Panama Canal to study yellow fever. Now, he couldn't see the virus, he couldn't isolate it, but he showed that he could pass it, that it would grow in cells, and that it causes the disease. So I don't think there is a contradiction between, you know, what the people who believe in terrain theory say and what I believe in, as far as big pharma giving us things that are unnecessary and even nefarious, medicine developing into a money-making machine that does many unnecessary procedures, are prescribed, and that is bought by Big Pharma. And we all know about the opioid epidemic. It was manufactured by Big Pharma, prescribed by supposedly great doctors of medicine. And the end result is that thousands and thousands of people became addicted, and thousands have died from.
So, I mean, I know it's an almost impossible question to ask, to answer, Stanley, but at what point do you think the pharmaceutical industry got too big for its boots and started, rather than, funding research into new techniques which would save lives, it started to concentrate much more on its shareholders and its profits at any cost?
I think it started in the late 60s and 70s on a very small scale. And as they became, as they saw they could have political power, do you know that the pharmaceutical industry now has 3 to 4 lobbyists on each congressman? Each company, for example, Pfizer, has an average of 3 lobbyists for each congressman in the United States. And they saw the power of money, that as politics became how much money you had to carry on a campaign, Big Pharma saw its that weakness and, you know, milked it to the max.
And what effect did Reagan,
if I may say so, the two people who started this new wave would be Reagan and Thatcher. The idea was that everything, you know, corporations could do no wrong, gave them absolute power, whether it's the pharmaceutical industry or the military industrial complex. And it has gotten to the point where by the year 2000, it's been, at least here in the US, I don't want to speak for the UK, because I'm not that informed about the UK, but here in the United States, I guarantee you that the FDA is totally controlled by Big Pharma, when it should have been the opposite, that the FDA is, you know, controlling Big Pharma.
Now, Dr. Andrew Wakefield, although I know he's officially still a doctor, has even made a film, I think it's called 1984, The Act, which is about the idea that governments will indemnify vaccine manufacturers. And I wonder, what effect do you think that's had?
Well, the effect has been catastrophic. And I think this last pandemic, it is almost extraordinary the power that they have given the pharmaceutical company and the money that they have given the pharmaceutical company. Pfizer and Moderna, a study, Oxfam, which is an organization based in your part of the world, came out with a study showing that they were making $65,000 a minute on those vaccines for which they got emergency permission, emergency use accreditation. Made it even become mandatory to force people to get the vaccines. And yet, all of their R&D, research and development, was funded by us, the public, to the tune of $8 billion between AstraZeneca, Pfizer, Moderna, and Johnson & Johnson. They got $8 billion in public money, your money, our money here, in order to do the research and development, which was totally inadequate, by the way. That's why it's, you know, emergency use that they have for it. And when a group of professionals here asked the FDA for all the documents that they used, all of the research, all of the data they used in order to give accreditation to the Pfizer vaccine, they have refused to put it out and have offered to put it out by small pieces to the point where it would take 55 years for it to be completely transparent. That is scandalous. And that is the kind of behavior that makes people completely, you know, become, you know, paranoid about the pharmaceutical companies, because they have reason to be.
So, I mean, that is interesting, isn't it, that we've now got this rather professionally produced film come out saying that actually viruses don't exist. It's an interesting timing.
Yeah. And sometimes I wonder if these, I don't want to accuse anybody. I don't know these people who made the movie. I don't know what they truly believe in. But whether intentionally or innocently, this is a diversion. And it is a diversion that covers the ass of Big Pharma. Because instead of concentrating on the very nefarious doings of Big Pharma in the last 3 years, they've opened up a whole new argument They've opened up a whole new diversionary attack on medicine, when the attack should really be on the abuse of power of Big Pharma and their control of government.
Okay, Stanley Laham, thanks very much for joining us. And I wonder if you could just round off by explaining where people can follow some of your work, maybe on ResearchGate or elsewhere.
ResearchGate and my Facebook page, which is public, are two places where they can see not only some of my scientific articles, but some political also. ResearchGate, purely scientific. It's researchgate.net.
And I would just reiterate that I did approach both Dr. Andrew Kaufman and Dr. Tom Cowan, who feature in the film, but neither of them was available to say anything. And in fact, they haven't, either of them, really properly got back to me and said yes at all. So I gave them a week, Stanley. So maybe at some point in the future, we can have this discussion with them as well. It'd be interesting to see what they have to say. Stanley Laham, thanks very much.
You're welcome, Tony.